This is July 11th, 2008. We're in East St. Louis at the home of Dr. Katie Harper Wright. Dr. Wright, would you spell your name for us, please?
My first name?
All of your names.
Okay, my first name is spelled K-A-T-I-E, the same as Katie Couric's name on TV. My middle name, which is my maiden name, is spelled H-A-R-P-E-R. And my last name is spelled like the Wright brothers who did the airplane. And that's W-R-I-G-H-T.
All right, thank you. So how did you decide to go to the University of Illinois?
Well, it really wasn't my decision. It was my father's decision because that is where he could get me a scholarship. But I had always wanted to go to, not always, but wanted to go to a Big Ten university because my teachers at Vashon High School in St. Louis were from the Big Ten. You have to know that back in those days, blacks could not attend the University of Missouri. And so the state of Missouri paid tuition for black scholars to go to like University of Michigan, University of Illinois, University of Ohio, and like that. So some of my teachers at Vashon, Guy Reffin and C.E. Scott and Frederick Pruitt and all were from the University of Illinois. So I felt very, very proud and fortunate that my dad could get me a scholarship to go to the University of Illinois.
And how did he, who was the scholarship from the university?
Well, I think it was a legislative scholarship, I think, because my dad was sort of in politics, so he knew the right people. But also I had, I was the valedictorian of my high school graduating class, so I had a good average and all of that. So it was kind of easy for him to get me in there.
Did you have to take tests to get in to the university?
Oh, no, not in those days.
No.
And, you know, they didn't have affirmative action in that days, but they let us in the universities because we were smart. And, we didn't have to take tests. However, my grades from high school in English and all were such that I was exempt from rhetoric one, and went to rhetoric two. So, and I don't remember, I didn't have to take a test for that. I think they went on my grades.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So your father, I gather, was excited that you were going to Illinois. Your parents were in favor of you?
Well, my dad was. See, my mother and my father were divorced many years ago. The Harpers were all here in East St. Louis. And the Locks, my mother was a Lock, came up from the South, and they settled in St. Louis, Missouri. Because that's where her people, that's where Aunt Clara and all of those, and Uncle John and those people were who could help my mother. My brother was born in St. Louis. She was pregnant with my brother when she moved to St. Louis. I was born in Arkansas. I was 2 years old when she brought us, came here. But the Harpers were in East St. Louis. So, and I was always a daddy's girl, so I stayed in with my father.
And your father was in politics?
Yes, I guess you called it that in those days. Remember that? Yeah, I guess he called himself a little politician. He knew, see, my dad had what we call a wash rack. Do you know what a wash rack is, where they wash cars? And it was down near what was the city hall at that time. And all the white politicians, the mayor and Mayor English and all those people, he washed their cars. So he was in with these people. And so he could get favors, political favors from them.
Well, tell me about the letter from the mayor that we saw.
Well, see, I was from Missouri, remember?
Right.
So in order for me to get the Illinois scholarship and the Illinois, be able to get the Illinois rates, you know, as a student, then my father had the mayor, because he was in with the mayor, with not Fields, Mayor English, to write a letter saying that I was a good student and I was from from Illinois.
So what did you take at the university? Do you remember, did you know what you wanted to major in?
Yes. I thought that I wanted to be a lawyer. So many of the, you know, a lot of the girls want to be lawyers in those days. So then I thought I was going to be in pre-law, so I took political science and English and those. But my first coursework was, I know I took Latin because I was good in that in high school. And I was in the school of LAS, so I took the regular entry courses. Had to take science course. Had to take rhetoric, but I was exempt from Ret 1. Took Ret 2. So I started out with general studies.
Okay. And what year was it that you entered the university?
Well, my dad drove us, and I'll never forget that Sunday. We drove up to the university that Sunday in August of 1940. I graduated from high school in January of 1940. But in between that semester, I went to the, to one of the trade schools to learn how to do typing and shorthand and that, so that I didn't waste that semester. And so that Sunday, he and my stepmother drove us up to university. Marjorie Olive, she was a great singer, was with us. And she introduced us to William A. Pickens, who was a big wig in the Baptist Convention and all like that. So we drove to the university that in that August, I don't remember the date, in 1940. And I lived at William A. Pickens' house. And that was on Washington Avenue, Washington Avenue.
And how did that happen, that you happened to live there?
Well, see, my dad and Marjorie Olive and my stepmother were friends with William A. Pickens. And, of course, she was sort of a, I guess you call it a big wig there. In fact, they put it in the newspaper that she had these guests from East St. Louis. And James Harper had brought his daughter, Katie, there to the University of Illinois. And so it was in the paper. I have that article. It's in my scrapbook. What was the name of that paper? The Danville News or something. I don't know, but it's in my scrapbook. So she took me in. She had two girls, Jean and Patty, and she had a husband named Leroy. Oh, this is all taking me way back. And she was very big at Salem Baptist Church. And so I stayed with her. But then, I think in my sophomore year, I became friends with a girl from East St. Louis, Guthrie Players. And Guthrie lived over with Ms. Lewis at 410 East Columbia in Champaign. And we became close friends. She says, Katie, why don't you move with me and we'll be roommates? And she was my roommate throughout my whole 4 years there. So I left Ms. Pickens, but we still were friends with her, and we went to Salem Baptist Church and all of that.
So tell me about why you were living off campus.
Well, and I just wrote a piece for the Belleville News Democrat that we should not focus on past injustice. And so I never, it doesn't bother me that blacks could not live on that campus. We could not live in the dorms on that campus. I don't guess it bothered me then. I guess it doesn't bother me now or whatnot, but we could not live in the dorms back in the 40s. But by the 50s, I think it was the early 60s, maybe late 50s, that Lillian Parks and all those girls could live in dorms. But in the 40s, we could not live in the dorms. We lived out in the town. There were about 100 or so black students that we all knew each other. There were not a lot of black students on that campus back in the 40s, and most of them were from East St. Louis, and a few from St. Louis. And we lived out in town, and different townspeople roomed and boarded the black students.
Now, did you eat on campus, in the dining rooms and that sort of thing?
Oh, yes, because I worked in the Union Building. I had two jobs. I was a typist in the teacher placement office. And then I was a bus girl in the Union Building. Well, of course, the Union Building came along after that, but it was still in the 40s.
So you were on campus when World War II, when the United States entered the war. Tell me what you remember about when Pearl Harbor was bombed.
I just remember that it was just, we were just all so scared. We were wondering if they were going to bomb us. They were going to come in and get us. And a lot of confusion and upset and hatred of Japanese, and calling them bad names. And then I don't remember if there were any Japanese students on that campus or not. If they did, I didn't come in contact with them. But that was a bad time for us. That was December 7th.
Do you remember exactly where you were when you heard the news?
I surely don't. But I remember it was on a Sunday. I went to church a lot when I was there. We may have been at church. I don't remember where we were.
Did things change perceptibly on campus after December 7th, 1941?
I remember that the men all left, the fellas left, and we became friends with the guys from Chanute. I don't remember the things, I'm sure they did change. You see, back in those days, they didn't have like what you call security and security guards and all like that, so I don't remember that any security got tight or anything like that, but I do remember that the campus, there were fewer students. Became a little more deserted.
Of those 100 or so black students that were there when you arrived on campus, how many of those were men, would you say? Were they half and half, or?
A lot of those, I'm trying to see, a lot of those were my friends, too. Lehman Adams and all those guys, Carl Clemens and all. There were a lot of young black guys there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But we became friends with the guy, the soldiers from Chanute.
Tell
the
me
guy,
about
the
that.
Airmen from Chanute. We didn't pay any attention to these guys that were from home.
So how did you become acquainted with them?
Well, they had USO, and they would take us up to the to dance with the soldiers and all, with the airmen. And so we met them, we became friends with them. They would come to town, they would come to the things that we had, to the dances and all of that the sororities had.
What kind of guys were they?
Oh, they were good looking. They were smart too. See, those guys, most of them had graduated from college or had been to college. We were still undergrads, so some of them were our tutors. You know, they would study with us. We had library dates with them. They were some smart guys.
And then eventually a lot of them, I guess, left to go overseas.
They left, and then some of them I heard, for example, Boris James, I can see him now. I heard that he was killed in the war over there in Italy. So they left, and I guess we corresponded for a while, but then, you know, drifted away. We all went our different ways. Mm-hmm.
Did you have rationing on campus during the war? Was that ever anything that you were aware of?
I don't remember not having enough food or anything. I guess they did have, but I don't remember we had rationing.
But in terms of gas or tires, or I guess as students.
Oh, no, we didn't even have cars. We walked everywhere. I guess some of the more fluent students had cars. But I didn't even know anybody who had a car. But I'm sure they must have had. I remember rationing during the war. But I don't remember that it was on campus. I'm sure that it must have been. But I don't know, I worked at the Union Building, and there appeared to be plenty of food.
Okay. Tell me about your social life. Was there much social interaction between black and white students?
Not really. I had a lot with them because I was a white YWCA girl. See, I was big in the YWCA as a Vashon High School girl. Girl Reserves. So when I got to university, I found my way to the YWCA. And so I got to go to a lot of the luncheons and the banquets and got on their Y board and like that. But so far as like dances and like that, no. Most of our social life was with the boys from Chanute, our dances, and with each other. We had library dates, but we did. I don't remember that we had a lot of social interaction with the white students.
Other than outside, other than you did at the YWCA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And who put on the dances that you went to?
There was one sorority there, which is not my sorority, which is still a good sorority. Alpha Kappa Alpha was ours. That was our social lifeline, really, because that's who put the dances on. They had a good chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority there. Delta Sigma Theta, which is my sorority, was not strong, was not big on that campus then. In fact, Alpha Nu was not... we had a chapter there, but it was not active at that time. So Alpha Kappa Alpha put on these dances. And of course, the churches had social things for us, too. But to get an invitation to an Alpha Kappa Alpha dance was really something. And you know, they had dance cards in those days. I don't know if they have them now or not. But we had dance cards, and we were all dressed up in formals and all. And my friend, Sister Susan, who taught us in the Cupid Club to write it for the St. Louis Argus, mailed me a couple of formal dresses, because I didn't have any formal dresses. She mailed me some formal dresses to wear to these things.
What did they look like? Were they, did they have the big puffy skirts? Or?
Semi, yeah. Not as gorgeous as they are now, of course. Remember, that was in the poor days. Mm. Remember, it was kind of, the Depression was during the war, but we were still kind of poor.
Did you experience prejudice? Of course, we know you couldn't live mm-hmm. on campus. That was certainly a form of prejudice. But what other prejudice do you think you experienced while at the U of I?
I really didn't, except... when I took my practice, I had one incident when I took my practice teaching, not practice teaching, the theory, the methods, we call it, in special ed we call it theory, and regular we call it methods courses, from a lady by the name Miss McCary. I should never forget this lady, a tall, big bone lady, white lady, of course. I never had any black professors all the way up from undergrad through grad school. But Miss McCary was the teacher, was the instructor, was the professor. And she gave me a B, and I know that I had earned an A, because the boys who were athletes, and so they were on the road a lot. So I had to help them with their lessons and their stuff. But she gave them A's and gave me a B. So that's the only thing. But so far as overt prejudice, like that, I did not experience that on that campus. Okay. But then it's me. I've always been able to make my way. I told one professor, Professor Bill Smith, they said he was real tough. He wrote the book on child psychology or whatever it was. I said, now, Professor Smith, Dr. Smith, I know you wrote the book and everything, but I'm an A student, and I'm expecting an A out of this course. So I got an A. I don't know if I earned it or not, but I scared him into an A.
So you ended up majoring in special ed?
No.
No.
I didn't do special ed until 1957.
Oh, so what did you major in as an undergrad?
Political science and speech. And then later on, I got into education. You had to have 16 hours in those days to your certificate or whatever in regular ed. So I got my 16 hours in regular ed. But then when I came home, I taught regular ed until 1957. Then I was recruited to go into special. and recruited with a Lions scholarship to go back to the university and get my master's in special ed. But before that, I was a generalist.
What classes stand out as you think back, other than your one bad experience? Were there other classes or experiences in classes that you remembered that were like sort of stand out in your memory?
Oh yes, my Latin class. I can see that. I can't remember that young professor's name. He was there a university called Bowdoin or B-O-W? Yeah, he was from out east, and he was my Latin instructor. Now, I had made excellent grades in Latin. I was excelled in Latin in high school. But when I got to the university, that was harder. But he worked with me on that and helped me with that. I didn't get an A out of him, but I got a B, which was really good in Latin. So that stands out. But my history courses stand out. Because I'm a born historian, I guess. I love history. I particularly liked English history because they have a lot of scandals, and I like to read about that. So, but my history classes and my my Latin classes, I was not good in botany. We had to take science. I was not good in that. I think I got a C in that. I might have got a D. But also my phys ed classes stood out, the ice skating, the tennis. Now, I don't know what they do now at the university, but in those days, in order to get your degree, you had to have a certain number of hours in physical education. And I remember one girl who had all of her 120 hours, almost all of it. She couldn't graduate because she didn't have her hours in phys ed. So my phys ed stands out. And I have pictures of me ice skating and all like that. I wasn't that good in it, but anyway, I could stand up on the ice.
Oh, so that picture that we saw, that was a PE class, actually.
Oh, it was a PE class, yep.
Okay. Tell me about the fashions of the day on campus. What kind of clothes were popular?
Yeah, clothes were popular. They had some popular clothes. Some of the same stuff as you can see in that, in some of my pictures there, some of the same stuff that they wear now. Penny loafers, that's what we wore for shoes. The saddle, see, all of these names are coming back to me now. The saddle Oxfords, you know saddle Oxfords? Were very big on that campus. That was a cold campus, cold. And so we were bundled up, we wore sweaters. I had, you remember Angora? You heard of Angora sweaters? I had Angora sweaters. See, I have always liked fashion, and so that's why I had two jobs, so I could buy some clothes. And I remember, Mary, that I had a camel's hair coat. That was fashionable then. They still got them. They still wear those, and I was tan. And that was the only coat that I had beside my fur coat that I had wiggled out of my dad. But then, as we stayed at Mrs. Lewis, we roomed and boarded with her, and my dad would send me the money to pay her. So that one time I didn't pay her, I says, well, I will pay her later when I get paid from the university. I will get my gray gabardine coat out of the will call. So I did, and I was all dressed. She was blind. She could not see anything, but she was so smart, taught us so much. She would always ask me, come here, girl, and let me see what you have on. And she would feel my clothes. And so she felt, it's funny, and I think, I laugh about it now, she felt this smooth gabardine coat. But she knew the gabardine was smooth and the camel's hair was rough. She said, girl, you've got a new coat. I thought you said your dad didn't send you any money. So we had, it was a fashionable campus.
So tell me the story about getting your dad to get you the fur coat.
Well, it was so cold on there, and everybody, and I told him that everybody had a fur coat. And and back in those days, that fur coat, I think, must have cost $50. But that was a lot of money in those days. He might have paid $100, $75, whatever. But I said, Dad, which is true, it was so cold on that campus. and all the other girls that I knew had a fur coat. So he sent me the money to get this. It was called Marmot in those days. And I kept that coat and wore it even as a young teacher. But we needed a fur coat. It was cold. You know that campus, don't you? It's cold, isn't it? And I was a comeback guest in 1996 for homecoming at the university. That was the coldest day of my life. And the football team lost. I was all bundled up, and I had a good fur coat then. I was bundled up in a mink coat, and I had pulled all down on my ears and everything. But then that brought back memories of how cold that campus really gets in the winter. But my dad did scrap up money from somewhere and got me this fur coat. You saw my picture with it, didn't you?
Do you remember the Tuskegee men talking about prejudice or racism or any, I mean, the fact that they were in a separate unit and mm-hmm. they were just being allowed to, they were finally allowed to at least do something in the armed forces. Do you remember them talking about that much?
Oh, yes, we talked about that.
What did they tell you?
We fussed about it and sniggled about it and said, oh, you know, they won't let us do this, that, and the other, but we're this, that. Yeah, they didn't like that, of course. But yeah, we talked about that. No, they didn't like that. No. It's like everything, you have to know that in those days, everything was separate. Schooling was separate. Everything was separate. That unit was separate. I never even saw any white airmen. I don't guess I did. If I did, I don't remember them. We talked about it among ourselves.
Okay. Let's see. How do you think, if you look back on the war, and not just your experience on campus, but how do you think the war changed your life? In what ways did it make an impact on your life?
Well, one thing, not just, we became more serious. I knew that I had to get my degree. We became very serious. And then when I graduated when I was only 20, and I came here to teach. So, and that the war was still going on. And so I took the place of Joe Perry, for example, who was off in war. When he came back, I had to move and give him his place. I think the war made me more serious, because I'm a fun-loving person, too, and I like to study and all. But the war did, but it opened up, too, some more opportunities for us.
Why was that? I mean, how was that?
Well, money was flowed a little better. See, this the Iraq war is taking money from the economy and everything. But the war, World War II, it appeared opened up some jobs and some, the economy was better. Does that make sense? So.
And do you think?
I think we became more prosperous, I put it like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you had more opportunities on campus because there were fewer students or because
the men
were gone?
See, there was never any problem with opportunity to me on campus. The only problem was we could not live there. Because I was totally accepted with YWCA, for example, totally accepted in the debate club. I was the first black girl, probably the first black person to serve on that debate team. But it wasn't that anybody kept anybody from serving on there, on those places. I just made my way with these people.
Well, tell me about the debate club. Where did you traveled around?
I remember we went to the university. We went to different universities. I think we picked on Indiana one time. I don't know. But that was an experience. See, in high school, I was president of the debate team. So in the things I did in high school, I just followed on through to make my way at the university. And we had, at the university, we had a girls' debate team and a boys' debate team. I was naturally on the girls' debate team. And I don't know how I got on there. I guess I got in with somebody to get on this debate team. Maybe somebody from my poli sci classes or something. But anyway, John Anderson, I can see him now when he ran for president. And you are probably too young to remember when he ran for president as an independent. And he lost, naturally, in the presidential race. But he was on the boys' debate team. And I was looking over some of my old clippings, and I said, John Anderson was on this debate team. So I dropped him. They lost, too. We girls beat them. And I wrote him a note saying, John Anderson, you never could debate affirmative. And that's why you lost the presidency. But
what issues did you debate?
Oh, some of the issues of the day. We probably talked about the war that was going on in Europe. See, I was on the debate team before before they declared a war on us in 1942. And I'm sure we must have talked about the war. We also talked about segregation, even back in those mm-hmm. days. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. Having seen that movie, did you see that movie, The Great Debaters, with Denzel Washington? You should see that.
No, but I have. I just bought the DVD.
So after seeing that, these kids, you know, debated segregation quite a bit. Do you remember specifically, like, going to white colleges and debating those issues about segregation and desegregation?
We may have, but I don't remember specifically. I have to look back at my clippings to see what did we talk about.
That was a big part of your college experience, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. And like at University of Indiana, did we go there one time? We went around to some different colleges, some different universities and all. And remember, those places were not segregated. I guess they couldn't live on the campus or whatnot. But they were not segregated as such, but there was segregation going out in the bigger world. So even in those days, we talked about segregation.
So
didn't do anything about it, but.
you went all through school and never had a white teacher, and then you came to the university and you never had a black teacher.
That's right. In high school, never had a white teacher. But see, these, my teachers, Zephyr Lane and all those people, would have gone to, like, the University of Missouri. But the University of Missouri did not accept black students. But the state of Missouri paid tuition for them to go to big white universities. Can you imagine that? And so these people went to the Big Ten universities, University of Ohio, that would accept black students. So my teachers at Vashon were brilliant people. And that's one reason I guess I wanted to go to the University of Illinois. So I never had a white teacher. Then in graduate school, from undergrad all the way up through my doctoral program, I never ever had a black professor. Then of course I became a black professor at Harris Stowe State University.
What else I need to ask you about.
I often wonder what happened to some of those guys from Chanute. They became the 99th Pursuit Squadron. Right. Now, a couple of those guys were from that joined 99th Pursuit Squadron from other places. Were in my high school graduating class. What was Chris's last name? Chris. Stacy Murray, Chris, were in the 99th Pursuit Squadron, but they did not train at Chanute.
Did they have cars?
The airmen. I guess they did. No, they didn't. The ones that I knew didn't.
So they maybe get a ride down to town or something.
Sarge like that. Didn't have a car. What's that? Voice James, those guys, no. Mm-mm. They get a ride. They had the USO, and we would go up there to dances and all.
And the USO was in Champaign, or?
Was it in Champaign or was it in Urbana? It might have been over in Urbana.
Do you remember when you learned about the death of FDR? Do you remember anything about that?
No. I don't remember exactly. I remember exactly where I was with John F. Kennedy, because that was not as long ago.
How about after the war and, or during the war, did you know any boys that got killed?
Oh, yeah. Claude Williams was in my high school graduating class. He was real smart. He was a cute little guy, too. Real smart. He was killed at Pearl Harbor. Mm. My brother was hurt at Pearl Harbor. Mm. And but I remember particularly Claude Williams.
Now, when you heard Pearl Harbor was bombed, did you know your brother was there?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So was that one of your first?
No, let me take that back. My brother was after Pearl Harbor. He was in the Navy. He was not at, but he was hurt after Pearl Harbor. But now Claude Williams was killed at Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. So we heard.
So how about after some of these young men came home, did you associate with any of them after they came home, or do you remember that they came home any different, or did that make an impression on you that they came home and were changed somehow by the war?
No, I guess they just came home thankful to be home. But see, back in those days, we didn't hear anything about what is that post-traumatic stress and all like that. People came home, these boys came home and tried to get jobs. You see, they had the GI Bill, and those that they came home, and the ones that I knew and got in college. I met my husband. He was of World War II. I did not know him. I met him long after the war. But these guys came home and got in college, the ones that I knew. But they had to, I know, like with my husband, he doesn't talk about the war much. Mm. But they went through a lot. I know I said it on an interview that the newspaper did with him on World War II. And this interviewer was like you. He was able to pull things out of him. And I heard him tell things about what happened to him at the Battle of the Bulge and all like that he had never even talked about. So those men from World War II were not talkative too much about it. But most of them that I know used that bill, that GI Bill to go to college. But I don't know of any that went crazy or anything like that. You know, they claim that the war ran the people crazy and all like that. That's not my experience with the guys that I know. My brother came home and he was hurt badly. He got pretty much disability and all, but he went GI Bill of Rights, got his degree, got a good job with the federal government. But society was different then. We were harder. I don't know. I don't want to talk about the people now, but anyway, we were hard workers. So these guys came back ready to make their way. And I'm sure that some of them didn't, but the ones that I know used their war experience to their advantage.
Okay. Anything else, and you look back, think about the campus, anything else related to the war and your experience on campus during the war, anything that would be related to the war that we haven't talked about?
Mm-hmm. We've talked about a lot of it.
You don't. I think I read in your transcript you don't really remember a lot of soldiers in uniform on campus or that sort of thing?
No, they were gone. They were not on that campus. I do remember that we, and I smile about it now, see, we, those boys that didn't go to war, we called them 4Fs. We didn't even like them. And so we were friends with the boys who did come from Chanute and like that. They were not, so the ones that were left on the campus, we didn't even like them because they, you know, they didn't go, they couldn't go to the war. We called them 4Fs. No, as I look back, those were some sort of harsh days, but they were good days for me.
When you say they were harsh, and you mean because
they were harsh because we didn't have money, we didn't have cars. I walked all the way from one end of town, from the end of town to the campus, and we all did, those of us who lived out in town. We didn't have a lot of money, and we had learned to smoke and everything, but cigarettes were like 5 for a penny and that. So I just don't remember that I had a hard time at the university. But, you know, as time goes on, that smooths out the wrinkles. So I probably had it harsher than I remember.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And by the time the war was over, I was here already here teaching. And things had opened up for us. And, of course, the teachers, we made $100 a month. But that went a long way. Bread, I guess, was a nickel, I don't know. And it's $2.50 now, a loaf or whatever. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I enjoyed this very much.
It's good to try to, it's good to have brought back some memories. You took me way back.
All right, well, now I think we probably want to get some other footage of you.
So, tell me about the boys from Chanute, the young men from Chanute.
The boys, we call them boys, but they were men, and they were, all of them are college men. And so we had a lot in common with them. And they, I can tell that they enhanced our social life. See, we wouldn't have had many people, boys to dance with. Back in those days, they knew the dances. We taught each other the dances. And we danced to the music of the Stardust, and you don't know anything about that song, the Stardust, and Stairway to the Stars. But they really made social life good for us, for black students, for black girls on that campus. They also helped us educationally because they would study with us. We had library dates with them. And particularly in our science and math courses and like that, they tutored us. I don't know if we would use the term tutored, but they studied with us. But the main thing is that they really did help us have fun and a good time. And we were so sad when they had to pull out.
Did they all leave at once, or
kind of? No, they didn't all leave at once, but I guess our friends, the ones that we dealt with, the ones that we knew, you know, they would say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so is gone, and Sarge had to leave, and they're gone, and those were sad times for us. But we had good times during the war with the young men from Chanute, because they were some smart guys. And they were good soldiers.